Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Monoleague Podcast. I'm Steve Seipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing today?
Good, good.
Doing well.
Doing fine. Disappointed that the weather's already reverted back to being... I mean, then again, it was way too hot for a couple days, so I suppose this is better.
What was it today? It was like in the low 70s?
Yeah, I mean, for a couple days, it was like 95 and humid.
I'm like, yeah, well, that wasn't good.
Here we are.
I'm still peeling from my sunburns from last week. So,
same.
And they're on my forehead, so it makes me look like really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I know to never leave the house with that hat.
It's your own fault for spending the whole game down in the scout section.
Well, you gotta, you know, sometimes you gotta make your bones. You can't just go in the media, you know, press box.
Well, they give tours in there now, so it's not even a press tour box anymore.
That's true. All right, so promote, extend, trade. And on this date back in 2015, a jury in Santa Maria, California, they voted to acquit Michael Jackson of all charges. And that was the second time that he was accused of inappropriate behavior with children. And he was a weird guy, you know. I don't know whether or not he did what he said he did, whatever, but he was a visionary and one of the, you know, goats of the music industry. So what are we going to promote, extend, or trade of his music qualities here?
Okay.
So first we have his dance moves. Then we have his singing ability. And finally, his fashion choices.
I'm trading the fashion choices.
Same.
Not a fan of the glove look?
I'm going to go ahead and say no. No, not really.
Or like the early 18th century military, you know, shoulder kind of things?
Nope, also very weird. Like actual music buff is out there just cursing me now for reasons I don't understand, but I can live with that.
I was reading something. I forget what it, one of our prospect lists from last year, because I needed to look something up. And I was looking at the comments, and somebody said, Lucas is a bad take machine. So, I think...
not wrong. Where's the lie?
So I think you're a bad take machine here.
So now I'm curious what that was in reference to.
Yeah, right.
Probably Anthony K.
Oh boy, yeah, his brother's back on the site.
Oh no.
What year was this, Steve? I'll go look in a sec.
I want to say it was last year. I think it was either the Mark Vientos write up or the Brett Beatty write up. One of the two. I think Vientos.
The one where I said Vientos probably isn't good.
Yeah, it was something like. Right, you said something along the lines of, like, he's treading water, but you don't think that really he's that great.
Yes, a very bad take, that one.
And then someone's just like, yeah, he's treading water, but he's still young. Lucas, this is a terrible take. You're a bad take machine. Something to that effect.
Let's revisit that one.
Anyway.
Singing or dancing's tough. I don't have a strong opinion on that one.
I mean, you have to extend his dance moves because how can you not? I would personally trade the singing because I think I could rock the glove look. I think I could rock some of the. You could ask Ken. Ask Ken. When we were at the game last week, there were a group of boisterous young men.
Rabble rousers, ne'er do wells,
they're Kentucky Derbys, Kentucky Derby finest. Yeah, it was a choice.
I swore to at my next game, you know, go there, full top hat, suit, the whole nine yards.
You're in a seersucker.
only if you can you put a monocle into this whole getup too? Just go like full Monopoly man with it.
Of course.
Okay.
So I feel like I need to embrace the outlandish fashion here. Prepare myself, hide myself, you know.
Unfortunately, the only thing I can think about is I'm trying to like come up with Michael Jackson songs in my head. And to be clear, I'm not that inept with music. I do know several Michael Jackson songs. But the only thing that's coming into my mind is that one Family Guy clip. And if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, well, I'm not going to elaborate on it.
Unfortunately, I don't know what you're talking about, but it's probably better,
at least one of you knows which one I'm going with here. I think
so too.
Well, moving on now to our way too early draft update. This will sadly, I guess, be our last segment until the draft of University of Florida, where my guy, Judd Fabian, plays. They lost regional play last weekend, as did the University of Miami, where Ken's pick, Adrian Del Castillo, played. So no one is playing anymore. Fabian ended up hitting .249. 364, 560 in 59 games with 10 doubles, no triples, 20 homers, 40 walks, 79 strikeouts, and 6 stolen bases in 8 attempts. Ken's guy, Adrian Del Castillo, he ended up hitting .275, 380, 395 in 54 games with 13 doubles, 1 triple, 3 homers, 27 walks, 28 strikeouts, and 1 stolen base in 1 attempt. Lucas's pick, Brady House, he hit .549, .675, .967.
In
31 games. 14 doubles, no triples, 8 homers, 28
no triples?
Walks.
Get him out of here.
Yeah, what a bum.
Yeah.
9 strikeouts. He was a perfect 21 for 21 in stolen bases. And he was Georgia Region 6A8 Player of the Year, which is, I think, a well-disturbed distinction.
Thomas, as a former high school catcher yourself, do high school catchers just suck at throwing runners out?
I mean, yeah. There's some kids that are, like, really good still, but also, like, the pitchers are probably slow to the plate, and they're not really holding the guy onto, like... Also, like, that catcher who he stole on 21 times or whatever it is was, like, he's going to go to school to be an accountant. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
The same guy over and over and over and over.
Yeah, this one
boy. Oh, it's one guy. It's just one dude.
He stole 21 bases in a game. But, like, I don't know. How many real good catching prospects are there out there, you know? Like, they probably didn't play them.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, your first pick, Jaden Hill, pitcher from LSU.
R.I.P.
He went 2-3 on the season with a 6.67 ERA in 29.2 innings. He allowed 29 hits. He walked 12. He struck out 25. Obviously, those numbers were affected by the UCL tear that he ended up getting Tommy John surgery to fix.
I still think there's something there with him, but I don't know if he gets drafted. And someone JT gets him and he figures it out, or, like, not figures it out. They rehab him, or if he just goes back to school and pitches again, I don't know. But I think there's something there with him.
Yeah. Your second pick, Andrew Painter, he ended up going 6-1 on the year with a 0.31 ERA in 45.1 innings, allowing 18 hits, walking 14, and striking out 91. So in years past, you know, the draft would have taken place this week, actually. But this year, with all the changes to the minor leagues and everything like that, the draft is going to be taking place on Sunday the 11th, Monday the 12th, and Tuesday the 13th of July. So it's going to coincide with the All-Star break.
So I kind of like that, by the way.
Yeah. It's, I think maybe it's maybe a little too far ahead, because we're basically going to have like a month of just dead air or whatever you want to call it. But it was always kind of weird to have the draft literally in the middle of like regional play, super regional play in the College World Series.
Yeah, I never liked that. Like the Mets drafted Pete Alonso and then I watched him play for Florida and it was just kind of like, what? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's so not like any other sport. He'd be out of there. He'd be done with school. So, and also having it when the Mets aren't playing, like, I think that's cool too, because it's during the All-Star break. So, like, it was always weird to me that, like, I'm at Citi Field and, like, they're drafting someone in the 10th round at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was. It's just always, and then that also kind of makes things a little bit more difficult trying to talk about, you know, their season as a whole. Let's say some guy goes off in the College World Series or goes off in regionals or mm-hmm. whatever the case is. It's just like, you know, not that that happens too often, but, you know, that's a lot of background information that you'd be losing.
Yeah.
So, when we get closer to the date, we'll have more draft coverage, but for now, we're going to be putting all that on hold. But it was fun while we were doing it.
Yeah, hopefully they don't take the boring college pitcher like everyone seems to be mocking them.
Well, another good thing about pushing things back is there's a lot more time to strategize, negotiate, conceptualize, whatever you want to, you know, say that teams and players and everything can do. So it'll be fun. I mean, the draft is always fun.
Yeah.
All right. Now we will move on to CPBL, KBO, and NPB updates. And look at the Unilions first. There are still no games in Taiwan. The league is going to present a proposal to the Ministry of Health and Welfare about starting the season soon with no fans, minimal media, no non-essential staff, players quarantining themselves in the bubbles, stuff like that. So the league might resume soon.
This is your weekly podcast reminder to get your vaccine so we can stop having stories like this.
Mm-hmm.
And if that take upsets you, I don't care.
Listen, we've lost plenty of listeners, I'm sure. So, oh well. I think that's a non-hot take to get the goddamn vaccine. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of pros that come with being vaccinated and being magnetized, right?
So
why not?
Yeah, this death nurse was making being magnetized sound like a negative. Like,
right, exactly.
Have people just not watched X-Men? I'll be discount Magneto.
Exactly. All right, the LG Twins, they went 4-2 this week. So they are 32-25, which is good for second place in the league. And they are a half a game behind the KT Wiz and the Stupid Sexy Landers, both of whom are tied for first place.
Is that what we're going
with? Wu Chen Cha, he returned this week. He was a big-time free agent that the Twins signed a couple of years ago, who I don't want to say he's been a bust, but he definitely has not lived up to his contract. He basically had a solid year in his first year, a poor one in his second, decent one in his third, and then a horrible one last year because of an injury, and then obviously because of COVID made everything, you know, start weird. So if he can reestablish himself, that would be pretty good for the Twins, but their pitching has been really good regardless. It's basically been carrying them. They have the lowest ERA in the league, combined 3.67. Their big free agent acquisition this year, Andrew Suarez, he has the second lowest ERA among starters in the league. He has a 2.60 ERA in 69 in the third innings. And you know who has the best ERA?
No.
Our old friend Walker Lockett.
Oh, yeah.
No. No.
He does. 187 in 67 in the third innings.
What's his strikeout to walk?
That I don't know, but not in front of me. But
bruh, Walker Lockett, come on, man.
The one and only.
They're gonna bring him home.
Bring the band back together. Flexen is still bad. It turns out.
Yeah.
Yes, as is Drew Gagneau. So. And before we move on to the Occult Swallows, since we're talking about the KBO, I don't know if there's, I mean, really there's not anything we can do, but I just want to bring to everyone's attention that Twitter has suspended Dan Kurtz. He is the guy that runs the My KBO account. His website's still up, so there's no problem, you know, looking at his updates there. But Twitter basically suspended his account because apparently he had some old bat flip compilations that used the chorus from a Little Flip song, whoever the fuck that is. And
he got DCMA'd?
Yeah, he submitted that dude submitted a copyright claim, and either Dan did not scrub the audio from all of the videos that he had, or he didn't do it quickly enough, or whatever the case, so he is suspended indefinitely.
Ugh.
And there are little fucking Nazis on Twitter that spew garbage and death threats and all that kind of stuff, and nothing happens to them, and yet Dan gets suspended. So, what the hell? Fucking Twitter.
Yeah, that's pretty lame.
I thought
you were going to say it was a baseball thing, because baseball loves to shoot themselves in the foot in terms of...
I thought it was a baseball thing, too.
Nope, it was Lil Flip.
Lil Flip.
Lil Flip.
Not to be confused with Big Flip.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
No. All right, now finally the Occult Swallows. And they had a good week. They went 4-2. So they are 29-24-7 on the year, which is third place in the Central League, but they're still distant 7 games behind the Hanshin Tigers. They are really just running away with it at this point. So when we first started following NPB baseball, like last year, and we were looking into the teams, like who is on the Swallows, who's the guy, Tetsuya Yamada was the guy, and rightfully so, because of the types of seasons that he had prior to 2020.
And he was like one of the guys in the entire league, too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not even just for them.
I mean, multiple 30 years, batted 300 with regularity. But then 2020 happened, and he was injured for a lot of that time, and he fell off a lot when he was able to play. And he's doing a lot better this season. He's up to 14 homers in 56 games, which is already more than he had last year. He had 12 in 94 games. But the average is still pretty bad. He's hitting .244 right now. He's not really stealing bases at all. So it kind of sucks to see, you know, the guy have his play impacted to such a degree by injuries. But meanwhile, Munetaka Murakami, a kid that seemed interesting when he first started following Swallows, but he wasn't really established, he's basically blooming before our eyes, and he's an absolute beast. In 120 games last year, and he was 20 last year, he hit .307, .427, .585 with 28 homers. He led the Central League in OBP. He led it in OPS. He was second in slugging, second in homers, sixth in batting average. He got a couple of MVP votes, but he ended up coming in 11th place behind Tomo Sugano of the Giants, who won it.
As I understand it, Japan still heavily subscribes to the winning team gets MVP.
Oh, yes. Yep. So through 59 games this season, Murakami is hitting .284, .432, .612 with a league-leading 19 home runs. He's second in OBP. He's second in slugging, OPS, pretty much every offensive stat. Behind foreigner Tyler Wilson, Tyler Austin. So,
the Yankees prospect that went to the Twins for a bit?
I believe so, yes.
I think that is, yes.
The Red Sox at one point, or I might be wrong on that.
Not sure about Red Sox, but Yankees, yes.
Maybe he got in a fight with the Red Sox that I'm remembering.
Well, I can't blame him for that. But it's, you know, it's sad to see, you know, one guy's star kind of fade, but it's nice that concurrently another guy's star is, you know, now just starting to get brighter.
Giants, which I do not remember.
Really?
No, I didn't remember that either. The Giants over the last couple of years just keep winding up with random dudes. I'm like, oh, right.
70 games for the Giants in 2019.
Huh? All right, well, I guess I just
185?
Out.
How did he play so many games?
The Giants are bad.
That's true.
Honestly, I still think the Giants are bad, but right now they're okay.
They're kind of like leveraging all the old guys not being totally washed, which is pretty cool, honestly.
Yeah.
Brandon Crawford, 15 home runs, whatever.
Buster Posey is, like, good again after a year off.
Longoria was good until he got hurt.
He got hurt, yeah. And Kevin Gausman just made himself is going to make himself a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Murakami is 21, and you know, if he ever wants to be posted and wants to come to the U.S., the Mets happen to have a third base opening already for him.
Oh yeah,
imagine Pete at first base and Murakami at third base. Just the amount of home runs.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Murakami hits a ton of no-doubter moonshots. It's not like he gets cheap home runs.
It's still probably a couple years before they even consider posting
him. Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I'm trying to think. I would not say I know the average age, but when guys get posted, they're usually in their mid to late 20s. I mean, unless there are very special circumstances like a Shohei Ohtani. I mean, Darvish, I think, was like 26?
Yeah.
27 when he came. So, but hey, in, you know, 5 years from now, I'm sure the Mets will still have a third base opening. And instead of Pete Alonso, it'll be Barbadia first. So, we'll keep the light on for you, Munetaka. Mm-hmm. We will keep the light on for you.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
All right. It's time to look at now how the Mets affiliates have done. And first up are the Syracuse Mets, and they had a bad week. I think that's putting it nicely.
Mm-hmm.
They played the Worcester Red Sox, and they went 0-6. They did not win a single game this week. So that leaves them at 11-25, which is dead last in the AAA East Northeast. And the Woo Sox are not like some super team. You know, they're not bad either, don't get me wrong, but just right now, Syracuse is just, I don't know. That lineup is basically half made up of backups to backups.
Yeah.
Since so many guys...
It turns out when your entire upper minors system has been put to the majors, the upper minors teams aren't good anymore.
It's not really their fault, but...
Binghamton not their was fault, always going to suck, probably, but...
But it's also, not their you'd fault, like their starters to be there.
Try to do better, little guys. Try to do a little better. They're just getting demolished. These are some of the scores from this week. 11-4, 12-5, 11-2, 11-4. They're not just losing. They're like losing. Yeah. Not great.
I'd like to see them push some guys up on it. Like, there's room. Like, let's see McGill in AAA. Let's see, I mean, that's the one name that comes to mind quickly.
Well, he is in AAA. He made his... Second start, yep. He made his second start this week.
Lucas, so is what you're saying that it's time for the Carlos Cortez experiment to take the next step?
So while I hate the fact that this is a serious conversation and that you've brought it up, it is time to promote him, yes.
Yeah, he's having a pretty solid week. We'll talk about him in a little bit. McGill... He was okay this week. Syracuse lost, but it wasn't really his fault. I think he just gave up. He gave up one run, a solo home run, in 5 1/3 innings. So when you think about it, McGill is kind of like their only depth option in the near foreseeable future.
I think he's going to actually be in the majors at some point this year. Like, if these trends continue and
they
keep needing pitching, he's just going to, by default, have to come up. Like, if Peterson keeps getting hit hard and they don't trust Zapucki, then he's just going to be the other guy. That's really it.
Yeah, I mean, look at basically everyone else. Yamamoto is hurt. Don't know when he's coming back, but it's not like he's a guy you could really count on too much either. When he isn't hurt. Zapucki, he has been bad, but he hasn't really looked particularly great either.
A lot of walks.
Sean Reed Foley, they could stretch him out to start, but honestly, I don't know if that's the best idea since he's kind of settled into that role that he's doing now, and he's been pretty good, so.
Yep. I would just let him do that.
Yeah. Franklin Killame, it's similar to like the Seth Lugo situation. Like, are you going to take him out of something that he's doing pretty well? And turn what is a strength into a weakness in order to shore up what was a weakness into a little bit more of a strength, like
especially with how many doubleheaders are coming up and all those games are seven innings, like having Sean Reed Foley who could go three or four out of the pen and kind of just shut one down, like assuming that he's pitching well, like he has been in the majors, like that's really valuable, you know, that could help with the Lucchese starts and the bad Peterson starts where he comes in and just kind of follows them. And use those guys as real openers if you need to.
Who else? There's Jared Eichhoff, but he's not really been particularly good. Franklin Killame, you know, he's hurt right now, so it doesn't really matter. But the Mets, you know, seem to have given up on him anyway. You know, he's not even on the 40-man. And same thing like Zapucki. He hasn't really looked particularly great, you know, when he has been pitching. So... Personally, I don't think we can count on Carrasco or Syndergaard at any point this season in any kind of meaningful way. So
I don't think the Mets do either. The way, because I think Zach Scott said something recently about like starting pitching being the obvious, the obvious addition place to add with the team. So I think they also agree with you
that problem is there's just like nothing to add on that front. To feel like
yeah,
it's, who are you trading for?
I mean, any average pitcher is better than David Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even if they're like the most average, boring innings eater starter.
I'd go for a Ty Anderson, Richard Rodriguez package from the Pirates. That'd be interesting.
And he's Rodriguez has been good out of the pen, obviously. So, like, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But I think they're kind of, that's what they focus on, and out of necessity, because you can't just keep trotting out Lucchese doing at most five innings, like at the very maximum. Yeah, and then also, I mean, tomorrow Peterson might give up five in the first, and then this is why games like today, we record on Sunday, happens when the pen is gassed, because you have to constantly have them all out there all the time. Like, it's just unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So they really need guys who just could go 6-7 after, who aren't named Marcus Stroman, because even DeGrom has been coming out super early.
Right, I mean, production-wise, you don't need to worry about DeGrom. You don't need to worry about Stroman. Walker's pitching amazing, but you know, at any given time, you know, he could break. And then
Ed Peterson's not been healthy.
No. And then, you know, Peterson and Lucchese, like you were saying, the little, you know, up and down is a nice way of putting it. You know, you never know what you're going to get with them. So,
like, Peterson could go out there tomorrow and throw six scoreless or give up six in the first, and I would be like, okay, either way. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be like, yeah, I could see that happening. Like, the range of outcomes is way too big, and you need someone who's more stable.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Mets do not have any stability, really, at the top of the minor league system.
Nope.
Binghamton Rumble Ponies now. They went 2-4 against the Bowie Bay Sox, and they are 11-24 in the year, which is fourth place in the AA Northeast out of six teams. So somehow the Hartford Yard Goats and the Reading Fighting Phils have been worse than Binghamton. And as we've seen with Binghamton, they have lost every single possibly conceivable way. So somehow Hartford and Reading have done that, but even more, which is pretty pitiful.
That's shocking to me. That I hadn't realized they weren't in last place. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they went on a run last week. I think they won like five out of their six games last week or whatever. So, but it's because they keep getting help from some unexpected places. Guys like Wagner LaGrange, Louis Carpio, who somehow is only 23 years old. But
I can't believe that. He feels like he's 30.
Guys like that, they keep on hitting. And as mentioned, the one and only Carlos Cortez just keeps hitting and hitting and hitting. And I don't know why. This morning I went back, I looked at some video from I took from him from when he was in Brooklyn in 2018. I was looking at some YouTube video when he was at the University of South Carolina. There's some clips from when he was in the ABL, and then obviously, you know, I saw him in Binghamton, and there's pretty high-quality MILB TV Binghamton has. The swing does look better than it did, you know, in a couple of years ago. I am far from an expert on this kind of stuff, but it looks like his swing is much less loud. He's still slightly open at the plate. He still has his hands high. His leg kick looks a little more muted than it used to be, but that's really like the only stuff that I could see physically that he's doing. But he used to be a very hacky swinger. Everything looked like he was swinging with like a very exaggerated uppercut, like he's swinging from his shoestrings. And his MO as a high school kid before going to the Gamecocks and then playing with them was always his power. So it's easy to see, like, okay, you're just going to sell out and swing at the fences especially when you have a metal bat, and you know, all you have to do is just kind of hit the ball moderately hard in the air, and it's got a chance.
Ping!
Yeah, and the swing looks a lot more level now. Like, there is a... Like picture a clock. That's the best way that I wrote down that to explain it. But it used to be like he was swinging 7-1, and now the swing looks more like he's swinging 8-30-2. He's much less angular with it. There's still enough upward angle to lift the ball, but it's not as extreme. So he's able to, you know, make better contact. He's able to hit line drives, you know, that are landing for hits, stuff like that. Is that enough for me to start saying, we might have something here? I don't know. Like I said last week to Ken, I have a visceral hatred of Carlos Cortez. Not the right word, but he's not my cup of tea. And, you know, I don't want to take anything away from him, but it is 32 games. And a guy like him, where he doesn't really bring too much else to the table.
Can he stand at second base at this point, or is it just corner outfield all the way?
No, he's exclusively played in left this year.
I mean, that doesn't help.
But I don't know if that's because...
I was going to say you could make him a utility guy, and that's his ceiling, but if he's only playing in a corner outfield, that's...
But I don't know if that's just because the Mets are saying, like, wow, you really suck this much in the infields, or we just don't need anyone... We just don't need you to play second base right now because of the... You know, they have Louis Carpio there, and I don't know. But, you know, not having insider information, I don't know if he's in the outfield and left because...
That makes sense.
Really bad, but yeah, I mean, it's great that the bat is woken up a little bit, but I would need to see more before I start changing my view of Carlos Cortez.
I mean, it sounds very, this is a prospect I was never high on, Willie Calhoun-ish, right? Except not as good a bat.
Calhoun always had, like, the hit tool, though.
Calhoun was supposed to hit and hit for power. He just couldn't play defense for shit. And
yeah, which is literally, like, he might be a DH prospect. And you're like, well, all right, what do I do with that?
And he was too short to play first, even, effectively. So,
so with Carlos Cortez, I'm now more confident he makes the big leagues. I've always been pretty sure he's going to at least... You know, log some service time, just given the draft capital that was put into him and
twice,
and the polish. How to say this? He's always been kind of polished. You know, he's never really been terrible. I'm a little more confident than I was that he makes the big leagues. He's still gonna have to hit a ton though, given the limited. Ways in which he can affect the game. So, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's something to watch, and at least, you know, Binghamton has now a guy to watch because the offense outside of Jake Mangum is not too interesting.
I mean, if you're talking about Jake Mangum being interesting offense, you're in trouble.
Well, I don't necessarily mean in terms of the numbers that are actually producing, but in terms of like, oh, here's an interesting guy to, let's see how he does. But speaking obviously of an interesting guy to see how he does, Mark Vientos. And he's finally showing a little bit of life.
Just in time for the deadline.
Yeah.
I think he's the guy they trade. If like, he's the first guy out.
Yep. Agreed.
Looking at, like, Beatty has probably lapped him on the third base depth. I mean, not probably. He probably lapped him the day he got drafted. But, like, Beatty's playing real well. He looks like there's something there for real.
They're probably going to have three top 25, top 30 prospects post midseason update. And I don't know that there's anything on the market that merits trading any of them. Like, Ketel
Marte.
Unless
you're just going to go crazy and, like, try to just overwhelm a team that... Like, just kind of, like, surprise someone and get a guy who's under contract for 2-3 years.
So but, Ketel Marte.
Yeah, but like I don't think you're calling the Diamondbacks and they're like, yeah, Marte's available. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, coming into the week, Vientos was hitting a paltry 218, 263, 391, with 3 homers, 6 walks, and 33 strikeouts. He had, I mean, it was an okay week, I guess is the best way to put it. He went 3-for-18, but his 3 hits were all extra base hits, 1 double and 2 homers. And then he did walk a little bit, 3 times to 5 strikeouts. And, you know, I don't really know what's been going on with Vientos. I mean, yes, everyone dealt with COVID last year. Yes, he's 21 still. Binghamton is a pretty aggressive assignment for him. Yes, he did kind of start slow in Columbia too, so maybe he is a slow starter. But my thing really is I saw him in 2018 with Kingsport. I saw him 2019 with the Fireflies. I saw him this year with Binghamton. And it does not look like he's taken any steps forward whatsoever.
It's the same problems.
Mm-hmm. He keeps basically the same thing keep popping up. He struggles against spin. Now he's struggling against spin now. The swing was on the long side then, and it's on the long side now. The bat speed seemed a lot less impressive than it should have been for someone of like his pedigree and the expectations then, and it still doesn't look great now. And I get like he has a reputation for being like a really laid back kid, you know, not really wearing his heart on his sleeve. And a lot of times that kind of stuff is like racial dog whistles. But it's like, dude, like, how is there going to be a fire lit under your ass? You're doing the same stuff over and over and over for years. At best, you're treading water while guys around you are breaking out. Like you were saying before, Beatty has eclipsed you. And yes, Beatty is a little bit older and he is playing at a level younger, at a level, you know, below double A. And conceivably, if Beatty was in double A, he would be struggling too, just like Vientos. But Beatty changed things around. He got in better shape.
You know, Beatty Vientos looks like a different player.
Yes. Vientos is not out of shape, but he's not like, yeah, I mean, maybe he has a six pack, who knows, but you can't see that, you know, but you know, it just seems like nothing has changed. And I don't expect him to suddenly look like the Hulk and gain like 50 pounds of all muscle, but yet still have the agility of a ballet dancer. Like you can't control things like that, but you can tweak your swing.
Yeah.
You can, you know, spend 2 hours a day in front of the pitching machine and refine your eye against breaking balls. Like, do something. It just seems like he hasn't done anything. And I've always been the guy that was always super high on Mark Vientos. And even at this point, I'm just like, eh. Like, I don't see much. He could just turn around and just go crazy and make us look like fools. And that would be great. I hope he does, but
I mean, Steve, I was told that I was a bad take machine for not liking Vientos.
That's true.
It's. I think I said this at the beginning of the season, but it feels a little weird to be like, it's a 21-year-old's put-up-or-shut-up season, but he's been here for so long, and now the Mets got they're in first place, and they got to make trade deadline acquisitions, and, like, there's not much to trade, so he's kind of playing himself right into that, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Some team is going to want him because when you get a 21-year-old prospect at the trade deadline, that's probably a win because you're, like, 12 games under 500 and the season doesn't matter. But, like, he's fixed some of the things that we had problems with. Like, a lot of the things that people were worried about, he seemed to have smoothed that out and made himself a better prospect because of it. And then you look at Vientos and it's like, well, it's year 3 of the same problems. Let's see if maybe another team fixes them and that might happen and cool. But the Mets also got to start getting major league reinforcements for a potential playoff push. And that is, it's not coming up soon, but it'll be there before we know it. You know what I mean? Like that always happens.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the guy that sticks in my head of the Mets needs to trade for a reliever or a starter to eat some innings, that's a guy. You know what I mean? A guy who the Mets won't really care about protecting because he hasn't played himself into the upper echelon prospects. So it sucks because you would like to see him succeed here, but also you get how he could get passed up.
Yep, that is putting it perfectly, to be honest. It's unfortunate, but that's just how it goes. And speaking of someone that basically played themselves out of a job, well, it's not really this guy's fault, I guess, but the Mets finally released Desmond Lindsay. And yeah. It's funny, because last week we gave him a shout-out for having a productive week. You know, he hit a pair of home runs, and it was like the most life that we've seen out of Desmond Lindsay in years. And, you know, went out high, I guess, because, you know, like a day or two later, they parted ways. For those who don't remember, Lindsay was the Mets' second-round pick in 2015, and he was basically their first pick overall since they gave up their first-round draft pick when they signed Michael Kadire. And he was pretty highly thought of at the time. There were some early mock drafts that had him going a little bit higher, but he fell to the Mets at 53 overall because he had a commitment to UNC, University of North Carolina, and then a lot of leg injuries that spring. And I'm going to read word for word Alex Nelson's draft profile of him when the Mets selected him. And quote, "The biggest question I have is concerns with his legs. He missed a substantial amount of time this spring due to a hamstring problem, which has bordered upon becoming a chronic issue. Hamstrings are tricky muscles, and there's no guarantee that the issue has fully resolved itself at this time," end quote. And that's, unfortunately, exactly what happened with him.
Yep.
He played, let's see, 35 games in 2015, 37 games in 2016, 65 in 2017, a whopping 90 in 2018, 15 in 2019, obviously none last year in 2020, and then 18 this year. So he has a whopping 260 games over the course of 6 years.
That's not great.
That's
not enough time to do anything. It's just,
So, I mean, nobody else in the second round of that draft popped, so it's not like the Mets really lost out on anyone big who's still on the board. But it was definitely a solid gamble at the time. You know, injured kid who had his stock fall, gamble. They didn't have a early pick anyway, so you might as well gamble on it upside. Sometimes it works, and sometimes, unfortunately, as we see here, it doesn't work.
I'd rather take that than a low-ceiling guy.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree.
But I don't think there's anything, like, this is an unfortunate outcome, but there's nothing, the most frustrating part of this story has nothing to do with Desmond Lindsay. It's that they gave up a first round pick to sign Michael Kadire.
Oh, don't remind me.
Do you guys remember the conspiracy theories that it was all part of a Tulo trade? That this was like some underhanded deal? Like, yeah, offer him arbitration, we'll sign him and that way you'll get a pick as part of a Tulo trade. It's like, that's okay.
What?
Sure.
Inject that into my veins. Those are good times. Shortstop Avenue. Well, alright, well, the Brooklyn Cyclones now, moving on to them. They did not have a good week. They went 1-5 against the Hudson Valley Renegades, so that leaves them at 10-23 on the year, which is last place in the High A East North. And after a crazy good week in Lakewood, the big three, Beatty, Mauricio, and Alvarez, they really cooled down. Last week, Ronnie Mauricio hit 259/293 with a double, a triple, and two home runs. And this week, Ronnie Mauricio hit, well, it's not great. He hit 0/176/0. He walked 3 times and struck out 6 times. So, not great.
I think my next bad take, as the resident bad take machine, my next bad take is going to be that I'm not very high on Mauricio, and I'm going to double down on that at this point.
Brett Beatty last week hit 524, 615, 1190.
Jesus fucking Christ.
That all?
Two doubles and four home runs. And this week, Brett Beatty hit 118, 118, 353. His two hits were both extra base hits, though. He hit a double and he hit a home run. He did not walk and he struck out five times. Not great. And last but not least is Francisco Alvarez. And last week he hit 318, 444, 682 with two doubles and two homers. And this week he hit the best out of all of them. He hit 214, 313, 500 with a double and a homer.
Yeah, he had a real great pimp job on the homer, though.
Yeah, it was. It was a really beautiful. Just the whole thing was just beautiful. So, you know, that is the best that of all those guys did. And in a vacuum, you know, that is not particularly great to begin with, especially when we know how good those guys can be and what our expectations are of them. So, and again, they're back at home. So I guess all three of them are going to end up being Mets. So you have to train them early to not hit at home at all and, you know, go off on the road.
Yeah, they brought up on the broadcast today that the Mets are owed a bunch of home games. I'm like, I don't want this, honestly. Just stay on the road.
Then we also have some news about someone. I guess the other interesting guy that is on Brooklyn, who's not those three guys. After hitting 140, 169, 193 in 16 games, the Mets finally sent Adrian Hernandez down. They added him to the developmental list. So when the Gulf Coast League starts at the end of the month, June 28th, though, I guess we'll be seeing him down there. He looked overmatched. So the GCL should be a better fit for him. Obviously the numbers weren't great, but I hope like just the overall experience was beneficial for him. Cause I know the guys in the dugout really seem to like him. I don't know if it was one of the catchers. I don't know if it was Alvarez or if it was Juan Uriarte, but one of the two of them, they really liked Hernandez and, you know, they were hanging out with him a lot, mentoring him a lot. Probably Uriarte because he's the quote unquote veteran. He's 23, so he's a veteran on that team. But you know, from the dugout, they were cheering for him and his at bats. They're saying encouraging things to him, talking to him in the dugout, stuff like that. So hopefully, you know, hitting not particularly great is not gonna bring Hernandez down, and just the kind of mentorship that they were giving him, hopefully he could take that back.
He literally had 16 stateside plate appearances before this year. I'm not...
Oh, yeah, no. Okay. But, you know, we've said before in the past about sometimes it might not be great to throw a kid in the deep end just to see how he sinks, if he sinks or swims. So hopefully he doesn't take his struggles back to the GCL with him. Hopefully he dominates. And then finds himself in St. Lucie, I guess, towards the end of the year. So speaking of St. Lucie now, we'll move on to them. They were 500 this week against the Palm Beach Cardinals. They went 3-3, and they are currently 20-16 on the year, which is good for first place in the low A Southeast East, ahead of the Jupiter Hammerheads now. It seems like every week there's a new team in second place. The team that was in first place last year, I believe it was the Tortugas. They went like they're on like a 2-8 losing streak, so they fell out. Yeah. So JT Ginn, he made his second start this week. He allowed four innings, just allowed one run, a solo homer on four hits. He walked one, he struck out two. 34 of his 49 pitches were strikes. He was relying mostly on the fastball, with a couple of sliders, a couple of changeups, a couple of cutters mixed in. The home run that he allowed, it came on a slider that was basically ended up being right down Broadway. So, whoops.
I think it was to a prospect of note. I saw it on Twitter, I think. I don't remember who it was.
I don't recall. But like we were saying last week, you know, he's just getting back on the mound. So that's a win in and of itself. And expectations should be low unless out of just kind of nowhere he starts bawling. But that's very unlikely because he's very clearly just reacclimating himself now to things. You know, he's basically maxed out at 92.8 miles per hour. And he's a guy that can touch 96, 97 when he really needs to rear back. So he's clearly not really trying that hard just yet, which is fine because it's, you know, rehab starts. And, well, not really rehab starts. It's in effect rehab starts because, you know, he's a guy that probably should be in Brooklyn, you know, from Mississippi State, pitched in the SEC. It's probably better than this low A Southeast.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just good to see him pitching, so that's good.
I'm sure they're like, go do the low leverage stuff for a little bit, and then once you feel like you're rounding into your form and you feel like more like yourself again, go to Brooklyn and finish there.
Yep. One nice thing, he has a 43% whiff rate on his slider, so that's nice. It's only literally 14 pitches, but hopefully he can keep that 43% up for the rest of the year.
Honestly, just get healthy through the year. Just stay healthy. Just finish the year and pitch every game that you can. And
yep. Really, no one else stood out too much pitching-wise. That's with Junior Santos. He had a pretty strong outing, which is nice to see. He threw 5 scoreless innings, though he did allow 3 hits and 3 walks. So that's not great. And he only had 4 strikeouts. Santos is 19 still. He doesn't turn 20 till mid-August, so I think we got to keep that in mind, because I don't want to say, like, he's been around forever, which he hasn't, but his name has been, you know...
Pretty much right away. His pretty name much. Out there.
Right, but basically right away, expectations were high. And the numbers really are not... The numbers don't really pop out at you yet. I was looking into the data a little bit, and... You know, he has obviously, you know, he's a guy that is known for the fastball. This year he's been averaging 93.9 miles per hour, topping out at about 96, which is more or less what it was when I saw him in Kingsport. I think there are a couple of 97s when I saw him, but again, it's still the beginning of the year, so it's whatever. But despite having a hard fastball, he gives up a lot of hits, almost one per inning. He doesn't really strike too many guys out. He's doing a better job of it this year. He's basically one in inning as well. And he walks too many guys. But he's making – batters are making a lot of hard contact with his pitches, but luckily for him, he's getting a lot of ground balls. Right now he's a 54.7 ground ball rate and almost a 50% pull percentage. So basically – not a lot of guys are hitting it in the ground, and they're just kind of pulling it and rolling over it. And that explains, I guess, why there are a lot of hits against him, but not a terrible, terrible ERA. 4.88, not great, but, you know, if more stuff is being hit in the air hard,
yeah,
it would be a lot worse. Yeah. And then the St. Lucie offense, it's really being carried by a bunch of lesser guys this week. In 5 games, Warren Saunders, he's hitting 11 for 21 with a homer. He's a interesting guy. The Mets signed him at the end of the 2018 season at the Bahamas. And he's kind of been like a Swiss Army knife because the Mets is not really sure what he can be, since he's very raw and was late to baseball and everything like that. They used him last year basically at every infield position. This year, though, they've been mainly used him at first with a couple of innings in the outfield. And then at the plate, he's being used all over the place. He's a cleanup hitter, but he's also gotten at-bats at third. He's hitting fifth, hitting sixth. So they're still, you know, trying to figure out what they got in him. He's a decent swing and some bat speed, so he's a gamble. You know, but why not? Because you find sometimes, you know, decent guys in odd places.
Mm-hmm.
Another gamble who's having a pretty good week is Brandon McIlwain. And he only played in three games this week, but he went 4-for-13 with two homers and a stolen base. And he was signed last year as an undrafted free agent because last year some really, what's a good way of putting it? Unfair rules were put in place regarding draftees and everything like that. Only 5 rounds, and then anyone else has a very small cap, but
20,000, I think.
Yep. But you remember Brad Marquez?
Yes.
Mikael Wayne is basically another baseball / football guy. He didn't get as far as Marquez did. Obviously, Marquez actually played in the NFL for a while. But all throughout his high school and college career, Brendan McElwain played full-time baseball and played full-time football.
Yeah, he played for Cal, right?
He played for South Carolina and Cal.
Yeah.
He was a quarterback. Yeah. Problem is, though, at least baseball-wise, he kind of got screwed because of a lot of different things, and he only has 45 games total under his belt because injuries, COVID, NCAA transfer rules that kind of screwed him out of a year of baseball. So he's a super athletic guy, but he's kind of, very below average hit tool, very below average eye, stuff like that. But
he's raw, like.
Yes.
He just hasn't played a lot of high level baseball.
Nope. So you know what that means, though. You know who the Mets need to hire as a special coach just for him?
Tim Tebow.
Hell yes.
Tebow's busy being a tight end in Jacksonville right now.
I don't know how long that's going to last, but when he's done, the Mets can use a football to baseball transition coach, because I don't know. I mean, I don't really follow other teams as in depth as I do the Mets system, but are there any other teams that have this many or have had this many, football to baseball guys, dual football baseball guys?
Not off the top of my head. I can't think of any.
No.
Can't think of any.
But, yeah, he's having a good week. And, hopefully that kind of stuff continues and St. Lucie keeps winning, because God knows we need one team in the system to actually.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah, we need someone to do good, please, for God's sake. All right, let's move on now to Oh Yeah, That Guy. And the way that the new minor league website is laid out is kind of a pain in the ass to do this. It is not as easy as it used to. So I couldn't really go to the back walls here. But Yudar Garcia, he had a good week this week.
I have no idea who that is. Not even
really
ringing a little bit of a bell.
Oh, yeah, I remember Yudar.
Well, back over the course of this week, when he was with the Savannah Sad Nats in 2015, Yudar went 9-for-26 with a double, a triple, 2 homers, 8 RBI, a walk, and 4 strikeouts. And he was a third-round draft pick in the 2014 draft out of El Paso Community College. He hit a very pedestrian 435, 490, 780 there. He was always, an offense first third baseman who's probably going to be forced off of third base because of a lack of athleticism and a kind of iffy arm.
It sounds a little familiar now.
Well, there's a bunch of guys that kind of fit that profile.
That's true.
In the late 20s, 2010s, but he had a solid year. When he went to Kingsport that year, he had 262, 327, 347. And then he had, I guess, what you could call a breakout season in 2015 with Savannah. He hit 296, 340, 442 with 9 homers. And that's even more impressive when you look at it through the context of it being Savannah, because, Grayson Stadium with 16-foot outfield fences, if you could hit anything out of there, then kudos to you. We ranked him as high as 18 on our 2016 top prospect list, but he was really never able to keep that momentum going because he got suspended for 80 games in January 2016 for taking some banned diuretics that are known masking agents for steroids. Does that ring a bell now?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So he basically came back and, you know, he hit okay with with Florida. Florida. He hit okay with the Columbia Fireflies. He had 275, but it was a kind of empty 275. And then his time on the team really didn't last much longer. And I guess the Mets soured on him. And there were some rumblings about some bad habits and a lack of dedication and whatever you want to call it, stuff like that. So they kept him in extended spring training for a couple of months when the 2017 season started. They sent him to St. Lucie in late June, and they released him literally like a week later. And ironically, he did fairly well in that week. So he spent the rest of the 2017 season with the Sioux City Explorers, which is an American Association team. And then he went to Mexico in 2018, and he has not played professionally since. And, you know, sometimes you could find what guys are doing in their lives after baseball, but for him, I could not find anything, so I don't know what he's been doing. But I always liked Uyor. Like you were saying before, like the profile sounds familiar. The Mets had a ton of guys like that, you know, Johan Urania, Adelin Rodriguez, third baseman that could, you know, hit the ball hard, but had questionable hit tools and a lot of defensive questions. And I liked Uyor the best out of all of them because he seemed like he was just a better hitter. You know, he was a fairly high draft pick. He had more of a track record with the JUCO years, and then he hit for better averages for those guys. But I guess he was just doing steroids the whole time, so not great.
Disappointing.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll wrap things up with the Wilponery of the Week. There's a lot of different things to go for this week. There's some weeks where I have to, like, look up, like, what stupid stuff has happened. But this week, there were so many different things. But I settled on Eric Adams, our mayoral candidate. Well, not you guys. But not Ken, I should say. But, you know, Andrew Yang, he got things, the Wilponery in the mail race started like a couple months ago by just being his horrible, awkward self. And then a little bit not that long ago, we had some controversy with Scott Stringer, another one of the candidates. He was accused of sexual impropriety. And a couple of weeks ago, we had some controversy with Diane Morales because it came out that she got caught in some kind of like bribery scheme and lied about it to investigators and couldn't pass a routine background check for civil service positions in the city. And now I think we might have the best of all of them yet.
Yeah, this one.
Eric Adams' mysterious primary residence. He owns a building in Bed-Stuy. He also owns a place in Fort Lee, right over the GWB. Reporters discovered some discrepancies in his tax records or whatever, about like his primary address. So he literally had to like have a press conference and invite reporters over to his house in Brooklyn to show them that he lived there. And you'd think that would have settled things, but that just opened up even more questions.
It made it 30 times worse.
It made it 30 times worse.
See, because my house is actually in Brooklyn, and here it is, t-shirt, is non-answer, is leading to a lot of questions already answered by my shirt.
And the internet did a very good job of, like, cross-referencing the refrigerator and, like, what type of stuff is in the place. It was just incredible.
None
of
the condiments were open.
There was a picture in the picture. There was like a pair of like red shoes, like in the background. And somebody like found an old story on like an Instagram post from like a year ago, or whatever, of the son wearing those shoes. So the mystery deepens and we still don't know where Eric Adams lives.
Man, he lives in New Jersey.
Oh, of course. Ken, as the resident New Jerseyan, what do you have to say about this?
Mr. Adams, New Jersey welcomes you, but probably shouldn't be holding office in New York City if you're not living in the city. I feel like that's a pretty basic requirement.
Well, that sounds like commie talk to me.
Please take your man back then, because don't want him. All right. If anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can shoot us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElvLahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at ZedMetSeaton, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.